The Art of Negotiation by Cordelia Delane. Read by Momotastic as an ITPE treat for WordDuck.
This could be something beautiful. Combine our love into something wonderful.
Ordinarily, Nightingale would be putting up more of a struggle by now, which was one sign, though not the first by any means, that the magically enhanced fairy dust, Sahara's description, not mine, had got into his lungs and was affecting him more than he wanted to let on. As it was, I was in no mood for an argument, and besides, we were nearly there anyway. There being Beverly's house, which was closer to the crime scene than the folly, and because Nightingale had refused to be admitted to hospital. I just need to sleep it off. But had then taken what I considered to be an alarming turn for the worse as I was driving us home. So anyway, here we were. Nightingale's been here plenty of times before, of course, to pick me up or drop me off, but I don't think he's ever stepped over the threshold. I wasn't sure if that was a Nightingale thing or a Beverly thing, or more likely a bit of both. They get on, and I know they talk sometimes, but Nightingale has never exactly had reason to be anything other than politely respectful to any of the Rivers until I showed up. This isn't the folly, Nightingale said, leaning heavily into my side. I had one arm around his waist to keep him upright, and the other was fumbling around in my pocket for the key Beverly had given me. Really, the only reason I thought I had a chance of pulling this off at all was because I knew Beverly was at a study group until late tonight. It's Bev's house, I replied, aware of the heat Nightingale was generating pressed into my side. She won't mind. This was possibly an outright lie, and Nightingale probably glared at me, but I was too busy getting us both through the front door in one piece to worry about that. Perhaps it was my nagging about cleanliness that was the real reason Beverly had never invited Nightingale in before, I mused, as I navigated us around stacks of books and papers from her coursework. Not that I tried to do it too often, just it was a bit more our space than just hers these days, and, well... Nightingale had clearly given in to the inevitable by now, so it wasn't too difficult to get his coat, jacket, and shoes off and maneuver him into Beverly's bed. I had briefly considered the merits of the sofa, but decided that the man who'd been shot twice had no business being laid out on a sofa on my watch. There was a cold snap in the air, so I pulled the French windows closed, but didn't lock them in case Beverly came back that way. I really hoped she didn't, because this was already going to take some explaining, and I could do without the inevitable Goldilocks jokes. I stared down at Nightingale and was relieved to see the color coming back to his cheeks. He'd looked awfully gray for a while back there. It had reminded me all too clearly of the first time I'd watched him sleep, when I hadn't known whether or not he'd be waking up again. I stepped out of the room to check in with Stephanopoulos and then Molly, and then hesitated on the threshold, considering. I could make some tea, work on writing up my notes, head Beverly off at the pass before she asked me if I'd lost my mind, or I could kick off my shoes and lay on top of the covers next to Nightingale, telling myself that I was too tired to sleep on a lumpy sofa, that Nightingale needed me there to keep an eye on him, that this way I'd spot Beverly coming back. But really, I did it because I wanted to, and couldn't convince myself not to.
This could be something beautiful. Combine our love into something wonderful.
You'd think, after living so long with Molly, and being woken up by her sudden presence in my bedroom more times than I could count, that I'd be more alert than most when finding myself stared at while asleep. Sadly, this was not the case, at least not with Beverly. Maybe she was quieter than Molly, or maybe I just thought she was less likely to kill me in my sleep. Neither thought was really all that comforting as Beverly's nails scratched against my ankle and her hand came up to grab my knee before I accidentally turned my surprise jerk into a kick to Nightingale's groin. I came awake pretty sharpish then. It must have been late, far later than for me to easily get away with the just having a nap excuse. I couldn't see her expression, but there was a definite tenseness about her body. She stood up and jerked her head toward the kitchen. I knew better than to dawdle. He got infected with something, I said, as soon as I judged we were safely out of Nightingale's earshot. Here was closer than the folly. It's fine, Beverly said, in that universal way all women do that means that it's anything but. Tea? She started boiling the kettle while I considered my next move. I know he's the Nightingale, I said, feeling slightly ridiculous. I respected him because he was a good man who was willing to adapt his thinking, not because I was in awe of the legend that had grown up around him since Ettersburg. Calling him the Nightingale seemed strangely disrespectful when it came from me.
You think that's the problem?
She asked, turning around to face me. I hesitated. There was a definite ghost of a smile now, and it was accompanied by a look both she and Nightingale shared. It was the, it's about time you caught up, look. Now, sometimes I get that look, and I know exactly what it means, but it pays to make them think that I don't. Sometimes they know that too. And sometimes I genuinely have no idea where a conversation is going. This was one of those times.
Oh, Peter, Beverly said. She finished making the tea, and I waited patiently as she handed me my mug. If we are going to do this, there needs to be some negotiation first.
I took a sip of tea and then added a spoonful of sugar. This?
Nightingale in my bed? She said, expression decidedly neutral.
I... what? Of course, at this point, I had some idea of where the conversation was going. I just didn't know whether I wanted her to know that, wanted to have this conversation at all, or wanted to pretend that I didn't know what this conversation was about. Or something.
You brought him here instead of the folly.
I knew he'd be safe here, I said automatically. Judging by Beth's expression, it had been the right thing to say.
Of course he is. He knows that too.
Nightingale's ability to sneak up on me is a thing of beauty, so I don't know how long he'd been standing behind me, or who the looks I thought Beverly was giving me were really for. I did notice, as I turned in my seat to find Nightingale leaning against the door frame, that at some point he'd removed his tie and undone the top two buttons of his shirt. His shirt was rolled up to his elbows, too, and he had removed his watch. He looked very much like someone I could imagine. Well, someone I could imagine. How do you feel? I asked, shifting a little so I could see both his and Beth's expressions.
A little tired still, but much more myself, thank you, he said, a little more formal than usual.
Beverly nodded, as if she'd been the one asking the question. Maybe she had, for all I know.
This is something you want? She asked,
definitely not talking to me, which was just as well, because I think I'd forgotten how to breathe at that point.
This is highly inappropriate, Nightingale said as a way of an answer, but he said it the same way he told me not to spend time experimenting, knowing it was going to happen anyway, and not really minding.
I don't have any objections, Beverly said. If there are rules.
I really felt like I ought to be saying something at this point, but my mind was a little too full of hope I didn't even know I had.
Nightingale looked over at me, in that unnerving way he has of knowing when I'm not going to ask for something for myself, because chances are I'm never going to get it.
More than anyone, I think he's the one that tries the hardest to get me what I want. It's not something about him I'd consciously realized till just then. But I didn't want him to do this just for me, and he clearly wasn't doing it for Beverly.
Peter?
Nightingale asked, voice soft, if a little hoarse.
You're still under the influence, I said.
Beverly and Nightingale sighed at the same time, the same weary disappointment that I was going to make this difficult by insisting on different priorities than the ones they felt were important.
Perhaps I should lie back down, Nightingale said, and started to move back to the bedroom.
He stumbled a little, and I hurried to help, my body fitting neatly next to his in what I realized belatedly had been a deliberate fashion. Beverly bringing up the rear was the clincher.
He got into the bed easily enough once it was clear I wasn't going to do something daft like make my excuses and leave, though I had in fact been coming up with some pretty urgent work that needed doing. But it was out in the open now, or at least the possibility of it was, and none of us was coward enough to put the lid back on the box. I didn't resist when Beverly pushed me to lie down next to him, just as I had been when she'd found us. It seemed strangely natural after I told my brain to shut up for a minute. The moon was brighter now, shining through the open doors, and I could see the way Nightingale was watching me. It was the same way he'd always watched me. I just hadn't been paying attention before. "And now he wakes up," Beverly said to Nightingale, though she carded her fingers through my hair to soften her words.
"I'm not sure that he's the only one,"
Nightingale admitted, which made me feel a little better. He and Beverly, then, had an almost silent conversation that involved some serious eyebrow wriggling. If it had been almost anyone other than these two, I would have worried what they had in mind. But it was, so I didn't. Beverly pressed a quick kiss to my cheek, and Nightingale moved forward and kissed me on the lips. Just a hint of tongue.
"You will have to wait for the rest until the morning," he said, that mischievous twinkle in his eye that I knew was the harbinger of all kinds of trouble.
"I will?" I asked, because apparently there was a punchline coming.
"So you can properly judge the difference between under the influence and absolutely sure of what I want."
I don't know whether it was his words or the way he was looking at me that had the greatest effect, but I was rock hard in seconds and seriously regretting worrying about Nightingale's state of mind in the first place. Though of course I wasn't, not really, and neither were he and Beverly. They were just terrible people.
"This is going to be fun," Beverly said, patting me on the back and then standing up. I didn't stick out my tongue at her because I'm a grown man, but she knew perfectly well that I wanted to.
"We'll finish up in the morning?" she asked Nightingale.
"If that's agreeable."
"I'll make breakfast."
I must have made some sound at that because she turned a glare on me. Beverly has many talents. Anything domestic isn't one of them.
"Peter can make breakfast while we sort out the details," she amended.
Nightingale gifted her with one of those smiles of his that I thought were reserved for only me. I found I didn't mind.
"That sounds perfect."
Beverly's shoulders relaxed then, and I realized she'd been nervous about all this too. It was a relief to know that she wanted this as much as me, and Nightingale. That this was something that was important, and ours, and not anything I'd imagined being able to have even 12 hours ago.
"I'll be outside," she said, heading towards her river before I did anything to mess things up, like invite her to join us. Maybe later. Or maybe never. But either way, it was too soon to bring it up.
I watched her leave and then turned to Nightingale. His eyelids were drooping, and I could see he was about to lose the battle with sleep. So I leaned forward and kissed him on the cheek, barely a ghost of a kiss.
"Compromise the experiment," he mumbled, and I bit back a laugh. "Testing variables," I replied, and there to edge a little closer to him, still wired but just as determined not to touch myself as I was not to touch him. Not yet.
He opened his eyes once, gave me a searching look which said everything I needed him to do just then, and then relaxed himself for sleep. I watched him for as long as I could, but his soft breathing, coupled with the soft splashing of the water outside, made it hard for me to keep my eyes open for very long. And eventually I drifted off too. A warm coil of anticipation for what was to come settled somewhere near my heart, where, I suppose, they'd always been.
I see lights are turning and I look outside. Stars are burning through this changing time. It could have been anything we want. It's fine, salvation was just a passing thought. It was just a passing thought. freezing offer won't last long. It's only a chance to pave the path we're on. I know there are more exciting things to talk about, and in time we'll sort it out. And in time we'll sort it out. Say it's possible to me. I don't see how it's probable. I see the course we're on, spinning farther from what I know. Hold on, tell me that you won't let go. Tell me that you won't let go. And truth is such a funny thing. On telling me they know what's best and what to be frightened of, and all the rest are wrong. They know nothing about us. They know nothing about us. And though they say it's possible to me, I don't see how it's probable. I see the course we're on, spinning farther from what I know. Hold on, tell me that you won't let go. Tell me that you won't let go. But times are tough, I know, and the pull of